Do you have a tough challenge with your supply chain or logistics? Logur is the intelligent partner that works globally with manufacturers, retailers, and logistics businesses. We help our customers define, buy, and safely implement solutions across the supply chain. If you want a more sustainable future for your supply chain, visit loguru.co.uk. Complete end-to-end satisfaction guaranteed.
Coming up in this episode.
We're working. This is our job. We're wearing high vis. You can see that we're working and you've hit a pedestrian. The chap drove off. Simon came home incensed and said, you know, this has got to stop. This is just far too regular now.
The Logistics Collective podcast is a series focused on the logistics industry, where there are many incredible stories to be told. We'll be speaking with those who've worked and are working within the industry today. What have been their experiences, good and bad, since joining, and would they recommend a career in the industry to others? Here's your host, Malcolm Pope.
Welcome to another episode of The Logistics Collective, the podcast, and today we've got something a little bit different and something really, really very, very interesting. I'm talking to one part of a very entrepreneurial couple who've been innovative in terms of life-saving solutions that they've come up with to help the logistics industry. And today I'm joined by Sarah Scaife, who, together with her husband, is director of Nuvec Solutions Limited. And she's going to tell us an awful lot more about what they do, why they do it, and how they actually started everything up. So welcome, Sarah. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And where does today find you?
Today, I am working from home because the weather is abysmal outside. And I'm in North Yorkshire, in Ripon.
Ripon is a beautiful town. And it's a lovely part of the world to live in. But I know that's not where you do all your work, really, is it?
No, we have a factory in Leeds, but from working from the office, it's just pretty. It's just nice to be able to walk to work past the cathedral. It's just a lovely place. So I have an office just for admin, and then we've got our factory actually in Leeds.
So I've got to correct myself, really. It's the city of Ripon, not the town of Ripon.
It is a city, yes. It's one of the smallest in the UK.
And beautifully formed as well. So, Sarah, if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
I think my superpower would have to be the ability to read minds. Personally, being autistic, I struggle to find hidden meaning in words, and I take everything very much at face value. I've learned that what people say isn't necessarily what they mean, and what they mean isn't what they say. I think reading minds would save me an awful lot of trouble that I may have had in my life so far.
Has that trouble ever been amusing?
Possibly for other people, yes.
Not for you.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I just take everything so literally. It's ridiculous. I could give you some examples, but I don't know that they're appropriate.
No, I think we all exist on the autistic spectrum. Many people feel as though actually some aspects of autism are, if you like, an evolution, and it's an evolution of better thinking and more logical thinking.
Yeah.
But of course, everything has challenges as well. Moving on, Sarah, could you tell us a little bit more about what you do in Nuvec, please?
Yeah, we have invented a safety solution for vehicles. These are vehicles from transit vans right the way up to the 11-car transporters. The idea behind it is it's threefold, really. It not only protects the driver working at the side of the vehicle, it also protects vulnerable road users, such as cyclists, at left turns by working in conjunction with the left turn indicator. And it also protects businesses from the financial point of view. Essentially, what it is, if you can imagine an industrial party blower, it works on compressed air. It comes out of the side of the vehicle, it's got a flashing LED down it, so it's highly visible, but it's also flexible. So the driver working around the side of the vehicle can actually walk through it, but it makes the truck a lot more visible to passing vehicles. Therefore, they tend to slow down and move over, as per the slow down, move over campaign in the recovery industry. I don't know if you've covered that in your podcasts, but we're involved with that as well as protecting the drivers. But as I said, there's also the vulnerable road users, such as cyclists, with the left turn indicator, which is it's a big blind spot for trucks. So we're just trying to protect everybody, really.
I had my first exposure, if I can call it that, to your products, really before I met you.
and it was out driving one day around the leafy lanes of Cheshire, and I happened to head towards one of the local towns, and there was a car transporter parked at the side of the road. And it was a relatively narrow road, and I had one of those moments to say, well, okay, I hadn't seen this before. And for those of a certain age will remember trafficators on cars, and yes, I am that old, just about, whereby indicators used to sort of hinge out from the side of a car rather than having your flashing indicators. It was almost like an amber-lit mechanical hand that used to come out at the side of cars. And this was very much on the same principle, but it was incredibly visible. I did grumble because, oh, I've got to go far out wider in the road. But then I thought about it and said, actually, that is creating a safe working space.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, I was sort of intrigued and interested. And then fate lends a hand. I attended the Logistics Leaders Network Awards, and actually Sarah and her business won an innovation award this year for what they've done. And I was intrigued enough to go up and visit and understand more, because, well, who doesn't like a story about somebody that has started a business on the basis of having innovation? You know, there is always a story. There's always there's a trial and a tribulation in terms of how you make things happen within that. So, Sarah, what was the point of inspiration that said, look, we're going to go ahead and do this? Where did the idea come in terms of the product first? And then how did you drive it on forward?
Initially, we have a training company as well. And the training company is to train the car transporters, exactly the people that you're talking about, the car transporter drivers, how to load and unload their vehicles safely without either them or the vehicles falling off. As part of this training, we obviously do risk assessments. And the major thing we found was it's not actually when the people are working on the car transporters, because then you're in charge of your own destiny. That's not the most dangerous part. The most dangerous part is working at the side of the vehicle when you have other people. You can't control other people's actions. You can certainly control your own, but you can't control others. So on one particular day, Simon was training and he noticed a car coming very close. He had to push the driver into the side of the transporter a little bit out of the way of the car, and the car actually hit Simon's hand. It wasn't a serious injury, but it is a weekly occurrence. The driver stopped. The driver shouted a lot of abuse. He was going to call the police because, you know, he's a wing mirror had been hit. And Simon said, please do, because you've actually hit a pedestrian. We're working. This is our job. We're wearing high vis. You can see that we're working and you've hit a pedestrian. The chap drove off. Simon came home incensed and said, you know, this has got to stop. This is just far too regular now. And so the idea was born. We started off, as you mentioned, the trafficators there. We started off with that idea. We have a whole wall of iterations in our office of all the different ways that we tried to get the mechanism working, because it had to be solid, but it had to be pliable. It had to not damage anybody. It had to not damage any vehicles. There were so many criteria. But also, as Simon's been an operations manager at a company he worked for previously, he knew from a business point of view what an operator would want, but he also knew from a driver's perspective what they would want. And also, having worked around trucks, we knew how robust this system needed to be able to work on our roads and work each and every time.
So you've obviously worked, you know, you've gone through a prototyping process to say, well, what's going to work best? And to be fair, I've seen them operate, both on the road, but also within your factory. And I was fascinated about, one, how they're obviously not solid items, but then how quickly they deploy, how efficiently they deploy, and effectively you've got the LEDs included in them and the visibility that they actually provide. And so that must have been quite a number of iterations and trials to get to the final product.
Absolutely. Both in the material, we've had the material through the process of development. We've had that custom made for us because we needed to be able to weld the material. It needed to be airtight. It needs to be waterproof. It needs to be all these things, but it needs to be durable as well. So that's now being made. Every single component that is part of the air bar, we've had to develop ourselves and have custom made for us, because of course there's nothing like this on the shelves at all. Even the flexible LEDs, they weren't made to roll in and out over 1,000 times. So we've had to look at re-engineering that type of thing. So yeah, everything's been made specifically for us through development and through an awful lot of trial and error.
So when did success first start to come?
I would say a couple of years ago, one of our bodybuilders builds car transporters for companies like Arnold Clark and Ford. And getting those types of customers and then reordering on all of the new vehicles, and now Ford do have a policy where all of their new transporter trucks will be fitted as standard with this. That is perfect for us because it's not only a recognised company, they are reordering more and more and more. So we have that on the home front, if you like. But also a couple of years ago, we got a call from America, just out of the blue, as you do. They'd happened to see it on the social media and they asked if we could go over there and trial one for them, which we did. So we now have a distribution agreement with America and they've got thousands of units in America as well now. So that's another success. And the more it gets out there, the more we find people taking it on and keeping it. And that for us, I think, is the main thing. People can see the benefits of it. People can tell how well it works. The driver's feedback is always positive. And I think that's the real success, is seeing it out there, seeing people using it and seeing it make a difference.
So in terms of the air bar, I mean, how many countries? I mean, we've heard about, obviously you're in the UK and you know, and in God's own county of Yorkshire as well.
Absolutely.
But we know selling UK, selling America, but you're doing more than that, aren't you?
Yeah, we have a distribution agreement in France as well. We have sold a few. We're discussing distribution in Australia at the moment. And just this week, we've been contacted from some people from New Zealand. So we're sending them a system over now for them to trial. And Japan, we were in Japan recently as well. And that's started to be sold there too. So yeah, it's becoming a widely adopted system, which is great.
So why are you so passionate about what you do as a company and also in your role in the company? What really fires you up?
For me, it is the potential of saving lives. I don't think there can be much more of a satisfying feeling than knowing that you are making a difference out there. It's not about the money. It's not about anything like that. It's to do with the fact that this is potentially life-saving. And if we save lives, whether it be cyclists, whether it be the truck drivers, what more could you want than that? What a legacy to have.
I think it's a fine legacy to have. And what is the value of one life? And I think we've talked about the author, I guess journalist as well, Ralph Nader, and all of his writings about the car industry and in the past, and he was a thorn in their side. But the truth is, we have to value life, and I think what you're doing is splendid. How did you extend the idea from that safe working space to really trying to protect cyclists in a city environment? When did that sort of move forward? Because you'd imagine, in terms of offloading, you turn the switch, the air bars come out and you've got your protected zone. But then you've then gone further than that and then said, well, okay, we can use these in a different way. What was the thinking behind that?
It was actually at a show that we attended in Alexander Palace, and we spoke to a chap from Transport for London and showed him the innovation as it was to protect the drivers. And we were chatting about the whole industry and the protection of everybody, really. And of course, Transport for London, they have a big cycle with the DVS standards. They have a big cycle safe push. And just in general conversation, we sort of said, well, this can be used for cyclists as well. It can work in conjunction with the left-hand indicator, because the drivers have just got cognitive overload at the moment with their cameras and the alerts and everything, as well as trying to concentrate and pulling out of a junction. This works automatically. The driver doesn't have to do anything extra than just put the indicator on, and it comes out with the indicator. And as soon as the indicator is cancelled or the vehicle gets to a certain speed, it cancels itself. So it isn't any more pressure on the driver, but it is a real visual deterrent for the cyclist to enter that dangerous blind spot. And we know all too well the amount of casualties just in London of people who are seriously injured or worse. And the idea is that we're not saying that the driver's in the wrong, we're not saying that the cyclist's in the wrong. We understand that they both have to share the same very small space. So we just want to keep that bit of distance, keeping them, you know, both slightly separate, so both of them are safe.
And I think that is a wonderful example of, if you like, continuing to innovate from a point of innovation and actually getting a hell of a lot more value. And I also know that you've got other thoughts in terms of how you could maybe extend the utilisation of AirBar, even in terms of more industrial environments whereby you've got to perhaps protect some areas on a temporary basis. You could actually deploy this quite successfully. And you actually used some of this during the COVID pandemic as well, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah, we made a post that was attached to a people counter. So rather than back in the day, if we remember the COVID times, having somebody stood on the door counting people in and out, the people counter would do that automatically. The air bar would stay out while the shop was too full. And when somebody left, the air bar would retract, let somebody walk past, and then come back out again to stop the next person going in, just to save the shops having to go to the extra expense of putting staff on the door, literally just to count people in and out. Our system did it automatically for them. So that, again, that was a little bit of a pivot there in COVID times when it was tough for everybody, really. But that has led us on to more ideas of, like you say, in factories, machinery. It can go on machinery, so you have to have a certain authorization or training to go near and work a certain machine. It can close lanes off in factories for when the forklift trucks are passing or anything like that. It can, in fact, be fitted forklift trucks because it literally runs off a little tiny 12-volt compressor and a 12-volt battery. So it can be adapted to run off most things.
So heading back in my time machine, when you and your husband were putting all of this together, I guess there's always there's a point of investment needed. I mean, I know where the investment from my own business came, and it was courtesy of Amex, Visa, MasterCard initially, because it always takes you longer to actually go from startup to begin to generate income into your business. But you know, what was that journey like for you?
We initially used our own money, but very soon in our development, we realised that it was going to be much more costlier than we had ever thought it was going, because we'd never done anything like this before, so we had no concept of how much research and development actually costs and how long it takes. We were very, very lucky. We were so fortunate that we had a friend who knew of a chap who was a very successful businessman and often put money into businesses that were starting out, and we took the idea to him. We hadn't even got a proof of concept at that stage. We took the idea, the drawings, and luckily for us, he understood it straight away. He could see the potential straight away, and he invested in us. If it hadn't have been for him, we wouldn't be where we are now. And that, to me, is a really sad indictment of where we are, really, because there are so many good ideas out there and people just can't get the finance to get them off the ground. But they could be really revolutionary. So yeah, we owe everything to our investor, and he's been so good. He's still on board with us now. Yeah, we just wouldn't be where we are without him.
It's a really good and interesting point that you make there, because whilst there are government bodies that people like Innovate UK and all of that that in theory can support, quite often that is either a best match funding, and more often or not, the bureaucracy of going through the competition for what funding may well be available will absorb more time than you actually running your business, which it means to say that either your business is applying for grants, and I've seen quite a bit of that happening, or indeed, you're going to have to accept the, if you like, the loss of your own productivity, your own attention to business development in order to be able to secure that. So I think that sort of white knight funder, I'm desperately pleased that you got it, because I think the idea and the product that you have is absolutely brilliant.
It has made us think that if we ever get to the point of success financially, that's something that we would want to do as well. We would want to give back to people like us who are in a position of not being able to do it on their own. And it's interesting you talk about the funding available and the grants. I've applied for many grants and been turned down because my application isn't good enough. And I know there are people out there who do grant writing. We couldn't afford, as a startup business, we couldn't afford to pay somebody to do that for us. So you're sort of stuck, aren't you? You can't move forward with the grant funding. You can't pay somebody to do it for you. My ability to write these applications wasn't up to where it needed to be for whatever it was they were looking for. And yeah, it is a shame.
It seems that we're missing a trick, really. Whilst we sort of acknowledge that there has to be due probity in terms of whenever public money is invested into business, I think the focus should be on investing in great ideas and less on, yes, I run a consultancy, but it should be less on consultancies that are just making money for form filling. It needs to be more than that. I mean, with my own set of principles, I won't engage with a client unless I feel I can offer them value. And if I don't believe I can offer them value, I won't just take the money. And maybe that makes me, I don't know, unusual. But that's, you know, those are my personal values, and personal values are mean everything to me.
Yes. Yeah.
What's been your best experience running NewVec?
Apart from having the opportunity to go to America and the discussions with the companies that we're having at the moment, all of that is very exciting. The best times are when I see it on the road. It still doesn't fail to thrill me because I think, oh, we did that, that's us. So yeah, that's the bit that just excites me the most, getting it out there. And the more companies that it's with, then the more chance I've got of seeing that, so the happier I'll be.
So in terms of maybe talking a little bit more about Sarah, I mean, what are you passionate about in terms of the role that you have? What really drives you?
I do like a challenge, and this has been a challenge and does continue to be. And I really enjoy resolving those challenges and seeing an end result. And for me, the end result is a happy customer with the systems on the vehicles and the drivers really appreciating it. And that drives me every time. I might think, oh, crikey, somebody new emails or somebody new rings. And I think, oh, we've just fit to some new vehicles that we've never tried before over the last couple of weeks. We fit to a refuse collecting bin lorry, and we fit to a highways vehicle. And today we're fitting to a dumper truck working on a building site. That's exciting. Because every time I see pictures of these vehicles, I think, oh, it could go here, it could go here, and think about how it could be used and think about what benefits it has. So every time we get a new type of vehicle in as well, that always excites me because it's just something different, isn't it? And it's always moving, it's always evolving. You never get bored.
It's sort of interesting. You begin to think through, and yours is one of the products that actually gets me it gets me really thinking about potential uses. I mean, certainly anything associated with inner city delivery, and maybe some of the parcel companies could be interested in this in terms of their operations. But certainly things like school buses, if you drive around America, they are far more stringent in terms of when we're having public transport for our children, in terms of rules of the road and also how visible those actually are, and begin to wonder whether or not that, in terms of the public transport sector, is something that it could actually grow into, because pedestrian safety is also part of this as well, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. It all comes under vulnerable road users, and we are thinking about buses as well, especially the buses in the cities. Sometimes they can't quite get to the pavement, and so the passengers are getting off the bus, maybe having to cross a little bit of the road. Again, sometimes you can get vehicles that try and nip down the inside of the bus while it's parked, while the passengers are getting off. So it's again that separation thing, trying to keep each aspect of each person separate.
Absolutely. So we've had some of the apps. I want to focus on perhaps the challenges and the downs. What was the most difficult time? What's the worst time that you had in terms of starting NUVAC solutions?
Been a couple of occasions where we've maybe had bad information, where we've entrusted our development to specialists who may well be specialists in their area, but they didn't exactly know what we needed. And we've found that we've lost a great deal of money going down wrong avenues. And that can be frustrating. Not only, obviously, is it expensive, it's time consuming. And you can get to a point where you think, oh, we're never gonna crack this, which is actually a big part in why we've taken the manufacture in-house ourselves, because we know what we want. We know what it needs to be. We know how it needs to perform. So we're best placed to do that. But of course, you can't get all the equipment when you first start out. So yeah, we were very reliant on other people. And again, in development, because you're not the big fish, if you like, because you're not the person putting in tens of thousands of items of orders, you go down the back of the queue. So we were looking at ones and twos of things for that development to move on to the next stage, because we had to test something to see if it worked before we could then move on to the next part of it. Because of that, we were very much at the bottom of the pile. It took so long and it was so expensive. But having moved everything in-house now, any sort of new inquiry that we get, pretty much within a few weeks, we can have designed it, made it, tested it to see if it works. So that's a massive leap forward for us, but at the time, very frustrating.
I would absolutely agree. Outsourcing is something that it isn't for the faint-hearted. You've really got to be tight in terms of specification. You've got to be really tight on prototyping and the quality control. You've got to have damn good contracts. And to a large extent, it is a shame in some respects that perhaps some of the larger manufacturing businesses don't develop the idea of, you know, that sort of incubator idea, whereby, okay, maybe something will work and maybe it won't. But if you look at often the way that, for instance, private equity companies work, you know, they might have a 1 in 20 that works particularly well for them. They're going to go and invest, but one will actually go big and they'll get a return on it. And I think a lot of more medium-sized businesses, they need to actually focus on being that little bit entrepreneurial, take a little bit of a risk in terms of actually helping, you know, helping a business with a good idea to grow. Sarah, what are you most proud of?
I'm most proud that, not coming from a business background, not coming from an academic background, that we have an established, successful business with a real positive product, and that we're becoming known in the industry now. It can feel a little bit imposter syndrome sometimes, having not come from that background, but I'm so proud that we've done it. And having the accolade of, as you mentioned earlier, the Innovation Award, that's just the cherry on the cake. That's other people acknowledging us as well. And that's just, it's something that I never imagined would happen. And it is doing. So yeah, every part about this journey, there's been elements of being proud of all the little steps leading up to where we are now.
And I think that, you know, your pride is justifiable. I think what you've achieved is utterly fabulous. And to have that saving lives motivation behind what you're doing. And I'm pretty aware that, you know, it's a very cost-effective investment for a business to make in order to be able to. I'm not going to discuss commercials over here, but I have a rough picture. You know, it is worth people coming and investigating what the cost of this is, because I think it is an incredibly sound investment for whether it be a logistics business, a parcel business, anybody associated with refuse collection, roadworks, anything that's associated in terms of this.
It goes on the road, really, isn't it? Yeah, the dumper truck we've got at the moment is on a building site. So yeah, it really is across a lot.
Look, Sarah, after this Christmas, if I put on any more weight, I might need one for the side of my car to be able to actually create enough space, safe space, for me to be able to get my backside out into the road. But never mind. What's really motivating you and your team right now? What's what What's the freshest challenge or opportunity you're dealing with?
What's motivating us at the moment is the growth of the company. It's exciting for the factory guys, which sounds bizarre. You wouldn't think that they would want to do more work, but they absolutely do. Every time we get a new customer, they're all, it's almost like we're a family, we're a complete team. And that's lovely because they're invested in our success and we are in theirs. They all know as we grow, they grow with us. So every time we get new customers, new orders, the whole team is motivated to do more and better and who next and what next and where next. And yeah, it's just an exciting time for us.
And you sort of really begin to get towards conclusion. I mean, I think it's a fantastic product, wonderful business and people behind it. Lots of potential to innovate further, lots of potential for growth. Do you need any help? Is there any help? Even if it's the help of opportunity, it's often having the conversation, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this is fabulous being able to do the podcast with you because it's raising awareness. We think that everybody knows about our product now. They don't. It's just in our little world, we think that. So raising the awareness, getting the word out there, having people look and understand and see how it can help them in their business, that's the sort of help we need at the moment. So as I say, thank you for having me talk about it.
Sarah, it's an absolute pleasure to chat with you. I am thoroughly invested in terms of, not financially, but I'm fully invested in the future success of your business. I think what is not to like about something that protects people? And even on the other side of it, every single time that you have an accident and you've maybe got to involve insurance or all of that, I mean, prevention is absolutely the best, the best solution as far as this is concerned. So my absolute hat off to you.
Thank you. We all know that employees are our greatest asset. So for companies that have got the drivers, protect the drivers. They're what you need to keep the company going, aren't they?
Well, given recent driver shortages, you know, to lose one or even have somebody on a, you know, medium to long-term sickness, when resources is not sufficient, then we need to protect what we have in the best way that we can.
Yeah.
So look, Sarah, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for spending some time here with me, and I wish you all the very best.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So, and that's it for this episode of the Logistics Podcast. Thanks very much to Sarah for her contributions into this, and we here at the Logistics Collective absolutely desire success for her and will continue to be interested and engaged in terms of the future of that business. As ever, you can access the Logistics Collective podcast on logisticscollective.com, and you can also follow on whoever your podcast provider is. We're pretty much on every channel now, so Spotify, Apple, and we're even putting these out on YouTube as well, if that is your preferred social media. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you next year.
You can get in contact by email, podcast@logisticscollective.com, or leave a voice message on our website, logisticscollective.com. The podcast is a production by LeGuru.